Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is On Air Daily News for Friday, January 6, 2023. I'm Naima Latif. And today we are joining the White House for a press briefing. So much has happened. And as President Joe Biden plans his trip to Mexico, there are issues facing national security because of the failure of the Republicans to elect a Speaker of the House. And as we know, if anything were to happen to the president and the vice president, the next person in charge is the Speaker of the House, which as of now, the Congress does not have an elected Speaker of the House. So this, among other security issues, are being addressed by the White House, and we are joining them as White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre has introduced the National Security Advisor for the White House some questions. So we will join them live now and get some answers to a number of issues. Also, the January 6th committee, the findings, the outcome, and what is to happen to many of those who are currently being charged with a crime of insurrection, and what are the next steps in securing the nation. So let us join the White House briefing in progress.
What we provide Ukraine from a security perspective is very much in keeping with two things. One, the needs that they have in the moment and our ability to provide those capabilities to them, but also taking a look at what the fight is likely to be going forward. Now, you know, in recent weeks, we've all been very focused, rightly so, on what was going on around Kherson down in the south. But the fighting in the east, particularly the Donbass region, has been particularly vicious in the recent weeks. And we see every indication that the Russians continue to want to propagate their efforts in the Donbass, particularly around Bakhmut. And we talked about that, I think, at some length. And that area of Ukraine, it's a lot of farmland, a lot of open ground, and it lends itself well to the kinds of capabilities that are in this particular PDA package. And the Bradley fighting vehicles are very significant in terms of being able to do what we call combined arms maneuver warfare. You might remember the Pentagon just recently said they're going to start training at a battalion level Ukrainian troops outside the country on combined arms maneuver, because that's really what they need to help continue to improve their ability in that area of Ukraine. So it's very much tied to the war that we're seeing on the ground right now, and what we anticipate we'll see throughout the winter months. We also talked about the fact that we didn't think fighting was just going to stop in the winter, that these two sides were going to continue to slug it out, and that has occurred. And I think, again, the Bradleys are just one capability. Take a look at the whole package when you see the Pentagon. They'll lay it out more in depth this afternoon, but you'll see that the whole package that goes along with this is well suited to the needs that the Ukrainian armed forces have right now.
I have two questions. First, on the Wall Street Journal is reporting that the administration is in tension with Saudi Arabia and they might not go ahead with the review. Can you comment if this is actually accurate and how far are we in the review? And second, on Turkey, as you know, this kind of rapprochement for Turkey and the Assad regime was an initiation of the Russians. Do you believe that this is the right step from the administration point of view, and will the Kurds pay the price for this?
To the second question, the short answer is no. We have a normalized relations with the Assad regime, and we would encourage any nation state to normalize relations with the Assad regime. But we'll see where these talks go and what actually comes out of this. I don't want to get ahead of where they are, but we obviously don't support normalization with Assad. I'm sorry, your first question was Saudi, thank you. The president has been consistent and clear that he wants this bilateral relationship, like any bilateral relationship we have, to be well-suited to the interests of the American people, to our national security. And we're going to continue to take a look at that relationship. Look, Saudi Arabia is a strategic partner, 80-some-odd years, and it's important that that strategic partnership continue, but it's also important that it continues in a way that is completely consistent with our values and our interests, and the president wants to continue to make sure that that's the case.
Thanks, Chris. John, next question. One, I'm outlining a little bit, but I wonder if you could say just specific actions the administration would like to see Mexico take to stop the
Well, I don't want to get ahead of the actual summit. They're going to talk about a lot of this. And Mexico already has taken a significant step. You saw just, I think it was yesterday, arresting Mr. Guzman, a key fentanyl trafficker. That is not an insignificant accomplishment by Mexican authorities, and we're certainly grateful for that. So we're going to continue to work with them in lockstep to see what we can do jointly to try to limit that flow. But it's significant. And again, as I said, you know, it's not like we haven't had some success. I mean, 20,000 pounds is a lot, but it just keeps coming. And so we've got to make sure that that we are doing what we have to do in our own authority and on our own, obviously, in sovereign U.S. territory, but that we're continuing to work with Mexico and partner with them.
Was the U.S. involved in any way in Guzman's arrest, and did their push really be extradited?
This was a Mexican operation, so I'll certainly let the Mexican authorities speak to that, and I'll refer you to DOJ on extradition issues. That's beyond my scope.
John, with the new parole program you guys announced yesterday, is there any risk that because now those who don't qualify for the program, they won't have any incentive to turn themselves in, and what people have been doing when they legally cross the border, and that could increase the number of gotaways?
First, I would definitely refer you to DHS for more detail on this. What we're trying to do with this new parole program, because we watched how it worked with Venezuela, by putting in place a process where a legal pathway was available, we were able to reduce by 90% Venezuelans who were trying to come into the country illegally. So we have some tangible results here that we can apply now to these additional three countries that Secretary Meyer was talking about yesterday. And so we feel there's great promise here. The idea, Jackie, and I couldn't speculate about your question, but the idea is to increase the legal pathways available to people and put in place a nice, safe, orderly process that is humane and gives them the hope that they're looking for. At the same time, being able to crack down on enforcement. And cracking down on enforcement is not an insignificant part of what the president announced yesterday, including adding now another 300 agents to the border. And he looks forward to going down there this weekend and seeing that enforcement and that process in place for himself.
And you know, what the objective is, obviously, but as the pilot program with Venezuela was happening, it did reduce the number of crossings by 90% over those first few weeks that it was in place, the number of gotaways did skyrocket too at the same time. And so my question is, does the fact that if you cross illegally, it makes you ineligible for this program, does that now disincentivize people to turn themselves in and it makes part of this problem harder?
It's difficult for me to get in the mind of every individual that may have already crossed over illegally. So what they ought to know is going to be making sure that we're increasing our ability to enforce these policies and to crack down on illegal entry. And
to adapt in real time
to the challenges that they're facing, and to be quite candid and honest and forthright with all of our, their partners, including the United States, about what they need to continue to do that.
That it is very humane in its structure, but that we've got to have the help
for members of Congress. And this is not something that he hasn't focused on. In fact, he has been focused on it since the very first day.
To address nationals from Haiti, Cuba, Venezuela, arriving at the southwest border. But as you know, a lot of Cubans and Haitians in particular are crossing the Strait of Florida Strait by sea, very dangerous terrain. How does this plan at all address those individuals? What should the individuals considering that path take them?
Secretary Mayorkas talked about this too yesterday, and obviously our message to them is don't take that journey. I myself have sailed those waters, and it can be treacherous, particularly at this time of year. If you're in an unsafe craft or a craft that's not made for those seas, it's very, very dangerous. So the first message is don't take that journey. There are legal pathways. The president is opening up more for people from those countries to get in to the United States, and we want them to use those legal pathways, which we are now again improving.
Well, those individuals, they're not going to be removed to Mexico, for example. So, are they more likely to get an interview based on a credible fear claim if they make that journey? That's the question that a lot of these individuals are asking.
Again, I'd refer you to DHS for more detail on this. I'm not an expert on that particular process. We want people to use, and of course, Secretary Mayorkas talked about this yesterday. Now, you know, there's a new app here in place for people to be able to apply appropriately for asylum specifically. And if you choose not to try the legal path, then the United States will, as Secretary Mayorkas said, use the tools at our disposal, tools which are old, but tools that we have. To stop your entry into the country.
Thanks, great. John, on Mexico, the U.S. energy industry deals with the administration to negotiations on Mexico's potential trade violation. Has the administration considered taking a step of calling for a panel to that dispute, and should we expect any resolution on that?
I don't have any information about a panel that will be stood up. Again, I don't want to get ahead of the president, but clearly trade issues will be on the agenda next week.
Follow up to my colleague's question on another Russian assessment. Switching topics. What is the U.S. assessment right now of the potential for another Russian assessment?
Our assessment of another Russian assessment?
Sorry, I meant to say offensive.
Very eloquently put.
Not really.
I was trying to throw you a bone, buddy. Let me put it this way, because I don't want to ever get in the business of being a spokesman for the Russian Defense Ministry. they have been on the offensive now for 10 months. We can't forget that. So when I hear all the talk about a Russian counteroffensive or a Russian offensive, you guys have seen this the same as I do. They've been on the offense every single day for the last 10 months, trying to take away Ukrainian lives, Ukrainian civilian infrastructure, and certainly Ukrainian territory. And we're seeing that play out right now, as you and I are talking, Jeff, in Bakhmut and in the Donbass. They have made incremental gains in the last few days. Now, we'll see where it goes in Bakhmut. But in certain places along that front, they remain on the offensive. Now, whether they're going to redouble their efforts and to what degree that will be successful, I couldn't possibly tell you because I just don't know what their intentions day-to-day are. That's why it's so important that we continue to support Ukraine in the way that we have been. The package that Karine just announced, biggest one ever, but I invite you to take a look at what's in it, and you'll see that we really are trying to tailor the support we're giving to Ukraine for the fight that they're in and the fight that we expect them to be in over the next couple of months. And we certainly expect over the next couple of months that the Russians aren't just going to throw up their hands and stop or just dig in. Now, there are places along the line where they are. Down in the south, they've largely assumed what we would call a defense in depth. They're not really on the move too much. But that is not the case in the northeast up in the Donbass region. So, again, I won't speak for their specific tactical plans, they have remained on the offensive places in Ukraine. We think that that's going to continue certainly for the next couple of months, and that's why this package was so important today.
To follow on to Michael's question about the pushback that the president's immigration plan is receiving, I guess to put a finer point on it, one of the central criticisms is that the administration is expanding Title 42 while also claiming to be preparing for it to end. So when it comes to Title 42, are you trying to have a push with?
No. I mean, right now, Title 40, first of all, the Title 42 is a public health order. It's being used and was used, was used by the previous administration as an immigration policy. It's not. What we need is real immigration reform, and for that we need legislation that we have sadly not seen. It is not designed to be, it shouldn't be used as an immigration policy, but we, in anticipation of it going away, and being able to make sure under Title 8 we can do the kinds of enforcement activities and mechanisms we need, yes, we are looking at expanded enforcement temporarily under 42 with the expectation fully that it will go away. And that expansion, I beg you to keep in mind, is in response to literally a historic, unprecedented level of migration from south of us in this hemisphere. I mean, people that are escaping intolerable circumstances in places like Nicaragua and Venezuela and Haiti. So we do need to keep it in perspective. The numbers and the scale of the migration challenge is really not something we've seen anytime in the last 100 years or so.
And just one more on this. Mexico has now received 30,000 migrants from these four countries who attempt to cross the border illegally. Did the U.S. provide, or are we providing any assistance, any aid to Mexico to deal with that influx?
I'm not aware of any specific infrastructure improvements or that kind of thing, but I'll tell you what, I'll take the question and ask because I just don't know. I'd also refer you to DHS on that.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Okay, guys. All right. Just a couple of things, and then, as you know, we have an event that the president's doing, so I want to lay this out for all of you. So 2 years after the assault on the Capitol, the president will host a ceremony at the White House, where he will deliver remarks and award the Presidential Citizens Medal to individuals who made exemplary contributions to our democracy surrounding January 6, 2021. These heroes demonstrated courage and selflessness during a moment of peril of our nation. They include Capitol Police, Metropolitan Police, election workers, and officials at the state and local level from both parties. Yesterday, we announced the names of 12 patrons who will be recognized this afternoon, and now I have two additional posthumous recipients to announce. The first one is Howard Lee Bingood, who was a U.S. Capitol Police officer who defended the Capitol on January 6th. The son of a U.S. Senate Sergeant at Arms, Officer Lee Bingood, died after battling insurrectionists at the Capitol and staying on to restore security in the crucial days after January 6th. Officer Lee Bingood's painful loss helped change the law to better honor the human sacrifice that too many officers and their families face. Second, Jeffrey L. Smith was a Metropolitan Police Department officer who defended the Capitol on January 6th. As he fought the violent mob, Officer Smith sustained devastating head injuries from multiple assaults inside and outside the Capitol. He died after protecting Congress, guarding the Capitol, and preserving our democracy. To honor the silent injuries of our fallen officers.
That was the White House briefing, and that was the White House press secretary. You just heard, and of course, before her, Jake Sullivan, the national security advisor for the White House. That's all for today. Thank you, On Air Daily News. I'm Naima Latif. Join us again next week, Monday through Friday, 1 p.m. Central, 2 p.m. Eastern, and wherever you are, you can join us live and listen to news from around the block, around the world, and right where you live. Until next time, enjoy the rest of your day.